Okay, I was going to talk about this topic at Shalosh Shudas this past week, but we got caught up in other topics, so I decided to hold on to it until tonight. I mentioned on Shabbos, I was reading Rav Nevin Sal last week, Rav Nevin Sal Sichos last week, and he makes a very sharp point. At the end of one of his Sichos, I pointed it out on Shabbos morning during the Drasha, that Rav Nevin Sal goes through all of the very, very strong Ma'amari Chazal that describe how severe the Aver of Lashon Hara is. And he says that although there are many Isurim where Chazal describe how severe an Isur is, Lashon Hara seems to have its own unique place, in the sense that Chazal even goes so far as to say that it's not only Ki'ilu you killed somebody, or Ki'ilu you rove at Avodah Zarah, or Ki'ilu you did Gilui Arayos, but it's Ki'ilu you did all three. That Lashon Hara is Shapul Keneged Kulam, and according to the Medrash, it's even worse than that. It's worse, it's Kasha Mikulam, it's worse than all the big three. So they reserve certain language for Lashon Hara that they don't reserve for anything else. And the Ha'arah of Nevin Sal has is that although very religious people, or even not very religious people, but basically Orthodox Jews, ask Shilos about a lot of things. We ask Shilos about Kashrus, we ask Shilos about Taras HaMishpacha, we ask Shilos about Shabbos, it's very rare that people ask Shilos about Lashon Hara. And here we're playing with fire. It's the Avera that we definitely violate the most frequently, or at least most of us violate more frequently than we are Mechal Shabbos, more frequently than we violate Isurim relating to Kashrus. And nevertheless, for some reason, we just assume we know, or we don't even think enough to begin to ask the Shaila. So I was intrigued by that Ha'ara, that he said that people don't ask Shailas about Lashon Hara, and I was thinking back, how many times I've gotten a Shaila about Lashon Hara, and once or twice, about a Shidduch question. You know, someone asked me about a Shidduch, should I tell about the messed up family background, should I tell about things that the guy did in high school, things of that nature, relating to Shidduch questions. But generally speaking, very, very few Shailas come in relating to Lashon Hara, so I opened up Yad Moshe to see how many shailas in all 8 volumes of Igros Moshe. I'm told the family wants to print a 9th volume. Maybe that will be the full of Lashon Hara tshuvas, but assuming that it won't be, in all 8 volumes of Igros Moshe, there may be 4 or 5 tshuvas about Lashon Hara. And I decided that to put together whatever I can find from contemporary poskim that relate to shailas that they were actually asked, relating to Lashon Hara. So we're going to jump from topic to topic, scenario to scenario, this evening, in terms of relating to different shailas that come up. The one that I found most intriguing, maybe because of the line of work that I do, is actually on the second page, on the top of the second page, which Rav Moshe deals with and Rav Shrumbach deals with a little bit differently, where a Rebbe or a parent dealing with children knows that one of the children did something wrong, but the Rebbe doesn't know who, or the parent doesn't know which child did something wrong. So there's this tremendous taiva as a parent or as a Rebbe to try to get the kids. You know, mashkichim are very good at this. Mashkichim in yeshiva, this is what they do. They speak to other kids and they get the information necessary to find out who did what wrong. And is that healthy? Are you supposed to do that? If you have your children are young, and let's say you have a 5-year-old, 7-year-old, 9-year-old, one of them did something wrong, so should you try to get the ones who didn't do something wrong to tell on the one who did do something wrong? Well, with such threats as, if I don't find out who did this, you're all going to be punished. And, you know, one of the kids is going to say, well, I don't need that, and I might as well just tell on the other kid. Or, you know, in the classroom, obviously, it's very, very common that something like this happens. So Rav Moshe was asked whether that's an appropriate mode of chinuch, or that's inappropriate. So Rav Moshe writes in Igros Moshe Yardei Chelek Beis Siman Kuf Gimel, I didn't number the sources, but it's the first source on the second page. Ubedvarim Rashi Amalami Lomer L'Talmidim Shem Yodin Mi Oses As Dvar Hagana Yodialo. Is a Rebbe allowed to tell the Talmidim that if they know who did the wrong thing, that they should let the Rebbe know? Says Rav Moshe, in very clear and certain terms, Hudavar mechur lasos kein. That's a disgusting thing to do. A Rebbe should never do that. Dizei yigrom shiakilu b'lashon hara. You're essentially training children to practice lashon hara. And he says that's a terrible thing to do. Afsha dimyon lahadam rakrosh baruch hu liyoshua v'chidalitor anilach b'sanhedrin daf mem gimel. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin daf mem gimel, if I recall correctly, I don't have the Gemara in front of me, but if I recall correctly, it darshens the story where after the Jews lost the first battle of Ai in the times of Yoshua. So what happened? The first city that that Klal Yisrael came into conquering Eretz Yisrael was the city of Yericho. And it was miraculous. It was unbelievable. They came in on Shabbos, they blew the trumpets, and the walls came right on down. They sunk into the ground, and the Jews just walked right in, and were able to take over this amazingly powerful big city of Yericho. And because it was taken on Shabbos, and because it was done in such a miraculous way, part of the instructions were that we weren't allowed to take any of the spoils for ourselves. We had to be Mekadesh everything for the Mishkan. That all of the money had to be Mekudesh to the Mishkan. So the story goes in Sefer Yoshua, it's right there, that there was a Jew who took spoils for himself. We didn't know immediately who the Jew was that took the spoils for himself. But in the next battle, which was against a dinky little town, the town of Ai, where we thought it would be a cakewalk after taking over Yericho, which was this major fortified city, the battle of Ai was supposed to be a joke. And we got destroyed. We got killed in Ai. And Yoshua fell on his face. He didn't know what to do. He was completely lost. He didn't know why this happened. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, you know what? Someone took spoils from Yericho. You need to get off your face, get up and do something about it. Biarta Rami Kirbecha. You have to find the evil, you have to find the perpetrator, and get rid of him. So I think, if I recall correctly, that's where the Gemara darshins that Yoshua says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, okay, so tell me, who was it? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, well, v'chidolit or anilach, I'm going to be your tattletale. Well, thanks. I'm not going to tell you who did the sin. Do a goral, which is an interesting concept. I'm not going to tell you, so do a goral, and I'll tell you that way, right? Meaning the goral also was obviously the assumption was that it was the Ad Hashem that was controlling the goral. In fact, they found the perpetrator, and they killed him. Achan was put to death because of that. They made a public spectacle of it. They made an example of him. And then with the second battle of Ai, they learned their lesson in a number of ways. First of all, the entire Klal Yisrael was punished, and this is one of the places where we learn Klal Yisrael Arevim Zelzeh, because they were punished for one man's sin because they didn't stop him from sinning. We also see that Klal Yisrael needed military strategy. When taking over cities, they realized that in the first battle of Ai, they didn't take it seriously enough. They sent a few troops. Second battle, they sent a lot of troops, and they attacked from both sides. One group drew the people out of the city. The other group came in and walked right in, where after the people were drawn out to fight, and then they sandwiched them. There was tremendous strategy in the second battle of Ai. So it happens to be a very critical battle in terms of Klal Yisrael learning a lesson in how life in Eretz Yisrael is going to be. That not everything is going to be like Yericho, you know, or like life was in the Midbar, where man falls and the clouds protect and the fire leads you. It wasn't all going to be miraculous. That they needed to put some ishtadlus in, they needed to really put some work in for some natural to conquer it naturally. But anyway, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Well, v'chida leiter anilach." So says Rav Moshe lo dami dahas. Over there, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't have to tell him because Yoshua had other ways of finding out. He says, maybe this is different. Meaning, don't bring me. Rav Moshe says, I think it's terrible for the Rebbe to make some kids tell on other kids. But I don't think I have a raya from the Gemara of HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying that I don't want to rat out the person who took the spoils of Yericho. Why do I think I don't have a raya from that Gemara? Because in that Gemara, there were other ways for Yoshua to find out and take care of it. How do I know there were other ways? Because look what happened. He used some of those other ways, and he found out, and he took care of it. Whereas over here, when you're dealing with a Rebbe who doesn't have the power of a Goral, and he's got to figure out who's misbehaving, so this is his only way. His only way. The kids know. He doesn't know. So, and he quotes an unbelievable Gemara in Erechin, Shamar, who is it? Rav Rivan, Rav Yoshua Bar Nachmeni, something like that, I assume, that he says, Harbe pa'amim laka Akiva al yadai, sheisi kovalu lavavavavram gamliel baribi. He says, yeah, when me and Rabbi Akiva were in the same classroom, I used to get him into so much trouble. I used to always tell him gamliel on him. And used to get him into trouble. And that was apparently something he was bragging about, that was a good thing, that they were classmates, and whenever he would see that Akiva would do something wrong, he would say, oh, Rabbi, guess what Akiva just did? and he would tell on Rabbi Akiva. So Ayin Sham Shai Zeto Chachal Lishma V'Hutzrach Sheyeda Mizar Rabbi Gamliel. And that was a good thing. Why? Because Rabbi Gamliel needed to set him on the right path. Rabbi Gamliel needed to give him Musar, and it was all Hashem Shemayim. No one was trying to do anything bad to anybody else. They were trying to increase the level of Shmiras HaMitzvos and Avodas Hashem in the classroom, and that's it. V'chein v'adai hu gam uvda d'rav hunu v'chiyah barav sh'amr l'shmuel sh'ayu b'shvil sh'al ha'tocha hutzrach sh'shmuel yedazeh. And we have other examples. Aval ha'shayich, but says Rav Moshe. So now, what did Rav Moshe do so far? He said, my psak is absolutely terrible. Rebbe can never do that. And I have two gemaras that prove that I'm wrong. Right? That's essentially what he did. Right? He has a gemara with HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, v'chida leter anilach, which is not a raya at all, he says, because that's it certainly doesn't prove that I'm right, he says, because that's that Yoshua had other options. And then he has a gemara where apparently it was a great thing for some Talmidim to tell on the other Talmidim. So that proves that he's wrong. So says Rav Moshe, no, there's a big difference between that Gemara and our typical case in a typical classroom where you have children. He says the chiluk is as follows. Aval hashayich zeh kishem es orer me'atzmo l'saper la'arav kidei she'ochichu. It's one thing if a kid decides to tell, and a kid decides to tell l'shem shemayim, but v'lok sharav yigzar al talmidav she'yisperu lo im yodim davar maguna. But not for a Rebbe to make a gezerah, to decree on his class, to demand of his class that they tell on somebody, he said that's out of bounds. Avkshal talmidim him gedol le'olam. And he said, even if this were Rabbi Gamliel's classroom, that wouldn't be allowed. Rabbi Gamliel never demanded that anybody tell on Rabbi Akiva. All he did was, he sat there, and if someone volunteered the information, fine, but he was never going to demand it. And he said, so basically I have two requirements in order to allow one kid telling on another, says Rav Moshe. Number one, it has to be 100% l'shem shemayim. It can't be just to try to get bring the other kid down. And number two, it has to be the information has to be volunteered, can't be pressured out of a person. So Rav Moshe says, even if you ever have number two, you're never going to have number one nowadays. That a kid in 5th grade or 10th grade or 11th grade is going to tell on another kid totally l'shem shemayim. He's not going to have a little bit of chap, a little bit of hana from the fact that that kid is going down and that I wasn't caught or that I didn't do the wrong thing and that kid did the wrong thing. It doesn't happen, Rav Moshe says. So Rav Moshe says, as a rule, it's a terrible thing. Should never have kids trained to tell on other kids. Now, I would imagine that Rav Moshe would qualify this, I don't know, but I would imagine that if it were something that were literally dangerous for the child, let's say you have a kid who, Rachmana Litzlan, it happens, is doing drugs, or is engaged in very dangerous activities. So something like that, where it's there's a mitzvah, l'samar adam re'echa, you're not allowed to stand by as you see someone is spiraling out of control and is putting himself in a situation where he can really hurt himself. But stop, someone was mischievous. Rav Moshe says there's no heter for one guy to tell on the other guy. Rav Moshe was called out on the carpet for this tshuva. Someone said, come on, a Rebbe's got to set the kids straight. You're going to tie the Rebbe's hands if you're not going to let the kids if you're not going to let the kids tell on each other. So Rav Moshe actually has another follow-up tshuva that he writes to a mechanich who said to Rav Moshe, come on, you can't possibly mean that. So Rav Moshe in Yerodei Chelek Dalid, you'll see, he says, Reishis Atareitz Mashak Safti B'Chelek Beis Yerodei Simen Kov Gimel. He says, first let me explain myself. Let me be Metareitz what I said. The Dover Mukhur Hu Shamalamid Yomer L'Talmidim Shem Yesh Mi Sheyodea Mi Yasadavar Agnei Yodea Lo V'Gorim Sheyakil B'Lashonara. That which I wrote that it's wrong and that it's just going to train the kids to speak Lashonara about each other. Shehuk Shel Kvot Taras Harav U'Dimei. So whoever he's writing the letter to, he says, I know you were bothered by the following. Meaning the rabbi wrote a letter to Rav Moshe saying, maybe he didn't understand the question. You have to understand, the Rebbe's not doing this just because he wants to know the juicy gossip. The Rebbe's doing this so he can stop the child from doing things that are wrong, from doing Yisurim, from his mischievous behavior. Isn't that important? And essentially what the question was, it was a very strong question. The question is that one of the rules of Lashon Hara is that when there's a toeles, when there's a constructive purpose in the Lashon Hara, it's mutter. And over here you have a very constructive purpose. And that being that the Rebbe's hopefully going to be able to control the kid now. The Rebbe's hopefully going to be able to set the kid on the right path, give him what he needs to be successful in his Avodas Hashem and not to be so mischievous. And sometimes the Rebbe doesn't even have to say anything. The fact that the Rebbe knows is enough. Sometimes that's enough of a deterrent. If the Rebbe-Talmud relationship is strong, and the Talmud respects the Rebbe, then there's nothing that will horrify the kid more than the fact that Rebbe knows I did something wrong. You find this not so much with older kids nowadays, you find it a lot more with younger kids. Right, with my second grader, the first thing, all you need to say if you want him to do the right thing is, I'll tell Rebbe, and that's it. Yeah, if Rebbe knows, then he's in trouble. That he doesn't want to know. Not that Rebbe's going to do anything to him, just that Rebbe's going to know. His Rebbe's the softest Rebbe in the whole world. We never heard a fly. Right, this is the Rebbe. I always love this. My son said when I said, what happens when you misbehave in class? My son said, my Rebbe says that if we continue to misbehave, he's going to have to start pretending that he's angry. And that's his whole shtick, that he's never actually angry, and he makes sure that they know that he's not actually angry, that he loves them, and he's just going to pretend he's angry because that's what they need to see at certain points in time. But anyway, the point is that sometimes that's enough. So he says to Rav Moshe, don't you think it's important for the Rebbe to know? Sometimes that will be enough to stop the kid from his bad behavior. And he quotes Chavetz Chaim, you're allowed to speak Lashon Hara about somebody to an authority figure who's going to be able to set the person straight. So Moshe says, maybe I wasn't clear enough, let me say it again. That's mutter when it's totally lishma. Find me the person who does it lishma, and good, it's mutter, I won't have a problem with it. Until you can find me the person who does it lishma, though, there's nothing to talk about. That's where you have Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri saying, yeah, that meir alai shemayim va'aretz, that I've told on Rabbi Akiva a lot of times. And you have the other stories in the Gemara as well. And that's only, again, Rav Moshe says, when you volunteer the information on your own, and it's completely lishma. Umitzarach shashtim lo yigala. And then Rav Moshe says, unbelievable. And if you're worried that lo yigala v'lo yadu la'ancho, efsho lo yachoshi milavar al devar ganai, what about your concern that the child's not going to adjust his behavior? If the Rebbe doesn't know, the kid's going to do the Avera again. So isn't that... don't we have to be matzil the child from the Avera? From doing the Avera, if little Reuven does the Avera and Shimon knows about it, how could Shimon not tell the Rebbe? If the Rebbe knows about it, he could stop Reuven from doing the Avera. Now Reuven's going to do the Avera again. Says Rav Moshe, if you force Shimon to tell on Reuven, you are telling Shimon that I don't think Lashon Hara is a big deal and that it's okay to speak Lashon Hara. Reuven's going to do another Avera? Well, let me ask you, Rav Moshe says, is the other Avera bigger than the Avera of Lashon Hara? What's he doing already? Is he killing somebody? Is he doing something worse than Lashon Hara? Well, because he's throwing spitballs at the Rebbe. What's he doing that's worse than Lashon Hara? So Rav Moshe says, if you're actively going to force them to tell you, you're being mechanich them to speak Lashon Hara. And if you're being mechanic to speak Lashon Hara, I'd much prefer the other Avera, whatever it is that little Reuven is doing in class, than to have to be mechanic a child to speak Lashon Hara. An unbelievably strong tshuva from Rav Moshe on a very pertinent topic for parents and for educators, obviously. Rav Sturmbach disagrees with Rav Moshe. Rav Sturmbach says, no, you have to give children a little bit more credit than that. I mean, what's Rav Moshe worried about? That, yes, it's mutter to tell Lashon Hara when there's a toelas. Rav Moshe acknowledges that. It's mutter when there's a toelas. And it's pretty much l'shem shemayim. But Rav Moshe says, you know, a child doesn't really make chilukim like that. He's not going to be able to distinguish between this case and another case. So Rav Moshe says, just stay away from it. You know, err on the side of caution in terms of train kids to keep their mouths shut about other people. Train kids not to talk about other people in a negative way ever. And that way, you'll be much safer in terms of the long-term prospects of Lashon Hara. Rav Sturmbach says, why don't you give kids a little more credit than that? He says, kids could probably understand. He says, a good Rebbe should be able to sit down in his classroom and explain to the children, there is an issue called Lashon Hara. We're not allowed to speak negatively about other people. Nevertheless, when it's to help the person, and when it's to set them on the right path, and it's for their own benefit, and it's for a toelas, there is a halacha that we're allowed to speak Lashon Hara. And then tell the kids, and now if you don't tell me, you're all going to get punished, you're all going to miss recess today, or whatever the punishment might be. And in that way, they'll understand it. So Rav Shtombach writes, Vishamati, he says, I heard Shabbatubasigros Moshe, Kasar Shadav Machor, who lassos came. He says, I heard that Rav Moshe doesn't like it, and that it's going to cause, he thinks it's going to cause kids to speak Lashon Hara. Avalorisi Bezach Shash. He says, I don't see a real problem here. Explain it to the kids. You can educate them. You have to give them a little bit more credit than that. So very interesting machlokas aposkim in terms of how to deal with this situation. So that was one that intrigued me. Another one that I found very intriguing, again, probably because of the profession that I'm in and I'm put in this position all the time, sort of put in this position all the time, and that is Rav Moshe has the following interesting case in the very first tshuva in the packet. Rav Moshe has the following case. Let's just read the shaila together. So a rabbi writes Rav Moshe a shaila where essentially a big gevir had promised this rabbi to give for his yeshiva a substantial sum of money. Va'amar kvar l'kvot haras rav, sheyavali l'misrad, office, shalom, v'yishalim lo nidro. And the gvir called up the rabbi and said, come to my office, come by my office, and you can pick up the check. You can pick up the check for whatever it is, the substantial sum of money that I promised to the yeshiva. Rabbi is excited, he goes to the office. U'kshabak kvot haras rav l'sham, amar lo hamaskir, secretary, the secretary shalom, that tells him, sheyatsu shalom l'shalim masha nadar, Elim ken yagado mi higido eshema ishazeshi avoy lav levakish menu shiitin avor mosad. Unbelievable. Secretary says, I'll give you the check, it's no problem. But my boss said, I'm only allowed to give you the check if you tell us who gave you my boss's name to come to collect tzedakah from. And obviously you got the name from somewhere. We never met you before. You found us. How did you find us? Who told you about his name? And then I'll give you the check. Hine pashut. He says, obviously, what's the gevir trying to do? He's going to find out who told on him that he has money, and he's going to punish him. He's not going to give money anymore. And obviously, the person who told you is also a collector for some important organization. He says, you can't tell. Because obviously he's trying to get you to tell, not that it's a bad thing that he shared this information with you, but that it's going to lead to something negative for the other person. So it's damaging for you to tell who the person was. Says Rav Moshe, it's also Davar Pashut, that if this gevir promised you money, that he's not allowed to back out, just because you refuse to give in who your sources are, you refuse to submit who your sources might have been, he's not allowed to back out. That was never a tenai. In the original pledge was a pledge, and that was it. So he says it's obvious that he's not allowed to back out on you, but you're absolutely not allowed to go and tell him. Now, Rav Moshe then goes into a discussion in general. This happens all the time to rabbis. What happens? Someone comes to my office all the time. They ask for money. I tell them, you know, sometimes I can give them something. Sometimes I tell them, look, the charity account in the shul is empty right now. We don't have anything. I can't really help you. Sometimes I just hang a sign on the door, and then they knock and ask. But the next question is always, maybe you can point me in the direction of people who can give, meaning they're looking for a list of people who can, you know, that they can go around collecting to, that they can make their way around the neighborhood. So is it mutter for me to give away those names of just, you know, not lavdavka gevirim? Sometimes they're just looking for people who are going to, they want names of 30 people who can give them $18 each, and that way they'll have a successful day. So is that mutter to give their names? Is it recommended to give their names? So Rav Moshe has a major discussion on this topic, and Rav Moshe writes that the relevant sugya is, interestingly, a sugya in Erechin and Bav Metzia. Now, Erechin is where you would expect the sugya to be, because in Erechin, Daf Tezayin, right around there, is the Lashon Hara sugyas. Right, we mentioned there's no Maseches Lashon Hara in Shas, but there are a couple of dapim in Erechin about Lashon Hara. One of the things the Gemara says over there is as follows. The Gemara quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, Mivarech Re'ehu B'kol Gadol, B'boker Hashkem Klola Techashiv Lo. That if a person goes around blessing his friend loudly about how great his friend is, then the next day very often it's considered like he cursed his friend. Huh? Why is that? I'm going around blessing my friend. Why is that considered like a curse? Kigon, demiklalu shpiza. I go to stay at my friend's house and he hosts me. V'tarchu kamei, shapir, and he does a lot of work to make sure that I'm comfortable. So what do? L'machar nafik yasif b'shuka. Next day I go out into the town square where everyone's there. V'amar rachmona nevarche l'planya. I say, God bless this guy. Why? D'hachi tarach kamei. Because look what he did for me. He made me a delicious dinner. He gave me fluffy pillows. He took care of my every need. Wonderful. So why is that a curse? V'shamanish v'azan v'ansin lay. Because everyone's going to say, oh, that guy, really? He has a lot of money, he's a generous guy, and they're all going to go take advantage of him. So spreading the word that someone is generous very often is not a good thing, because then people are going to go take advantage. Rashi says, what does it mean they're going to take advantage? So says Rashi, two possibilities. Either v'shamin anshei alami, shehu ashir, strong men are going to hear that he's rich, va'azli va'ansi le lemamone, and they're going to rob him. I mean, I never even knew that guy had money. Look at that. He gave you a steak dinner? Really? Well, maybe it's kedai to go. Got enough of them are going to go after him. So that's one possibility. Lishna achrina ansi le shemis achsin in etzlo orchin ad shemichalin mamono. That he's going to end up running a hotel. That guests are going to be coming one after another until he's left with nothing, until he's totally dry, he has nothing left. So Rav Moshe says, wait a second, so from that Gemara it sounds like you're not allowed to go and tell who the generous people are. Because then there's a concern that if you go advertise who your generous people are, that they're going to take advantage of him and they're going to dry him out. They're going to take everything he's got. So if you say like the first Lashon in Rashi that no, we're afraid of Ganavim, that Ganavim are going to rob from him, so that would sound like it's only concerned if you're dealing with Ganavim. But if a Chashva Rashiva comes from Eretz Yisrael, and you know he's a good guy, and he's sincere, and he's honest, and he wants to know where I can get money, so there's no problem in telling him. He's not going to ganav anybody, he's not going to steal anything. But according to the second Pshat in Rashi, it sounds like it should be a problem. Because according to the second Pshat in Rashi, what's the concern? That they're just going to take advantage. Everyone's going to go collecting by this guy, and they're going to wipe him clean. So according to the second Pshat in Rashi, it should be a concern. No, so why do you think? What Rav Moshe is going to end up saying, it's never a problem at all. Even according to the second Pshat in Rashi. So what's Pshat? Why is that a problem in the Gemara? The case of you going around saying, I stayed at this guy's house, and we're worried that people are going to be knocking down his door to stay at his house, and that's a problem. But to tell someone where to collect money from is not a problem. So what should the difference be? One more Maramakum first. And that is the Gemara in Bav Metzia. We did it not that long ago in the Daf Yomi, where the Gemara tells us that there are three things, Bahani Tlas Mili, at the very bottom of Chav Gimel Beis in Bav Metzia, Bahani Tlas Mili Avidi Rabbanu Shanu Bimilayhu, that there are three things rabbis lie about consistently, and they're supposed to. It's a good thing that they lie about. There may be more things that they actually lie about, three that they're supposed to lie about, and they are Bimaseches, what they're learning. Meaning, Rashi explains, someone asks you, hey, how well do you know this Masechta? So you can say, not so well. Even though you know it by heart. Right? You're allowed to lie about something like that. Now, Tulsus discusses, but don't we have a rule, v'shinantim, that she mechudadim b'ficha, that the words of Torah should be so fluent on your lips that if someone asks you, al tegamgem v'tomer lo miyad, don't stumble, don't stutter, just say it right away. You should have it so fluent. You should be able to say it immediately. So what do you mean you're allowed to lie about Masechta? So it also says there's a big difference when someone says, I have a shayla, I need an answer. Do you know how to answer this question? Where you then have an achrayas to answer the question versus, hey, you're so smart. Do you know all of Nezikin? And in that situation, you could say, no, I really don't. You know, it's if it's just about the kavod, so you can do without the kavod. If the person needs your help, so you have to provide your help, then you have to be fluent. So that's one. What else? Ubipuraya. If someone asks about things relating to the bedroom, Were you with your wife last night in the bedroom? So that's something that we don't talk about, something that we're allowed to lie about. And the way Tosfos understands, if I recall correctly, that they say, which bed did you sleep in? And they think that they might find keri, they might find the keri on one of the beds, so you can lie about the bed so that they won't find it. So no one should know those things. And that's why the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch that we hide the Lel HaTvila. We don't tell about the Lel HaTvila to anybody, because the Puraya is one of the things, the Puria, the bed, is one of the things that we don't speak about. It's something that we're not supposed to, no one's supposed to know when it's the Lel Ona, when it's what's going on in somebody's bedroom at night. That's why a lot of people make a mistake. Rav Moshe writes in the Tshuva, a lot of people think that it means you're not allowed to tell anyone when a woman is in Nida. But Moshe writes, no, that's not the case at all. In fact, in the Gemara's times, it used to be common knowledge when a woman was needed. They had to know. They had to deal with taharos. They had to deal with truma. That had to remain tahar. So a woman was in need, she would actually wear special clothing that would indicate to the world that she was in need. There's a whole siman in Shulchan Aruch. If you saw a woman wearing that clothing, and then she later says, I wasn't really in need, I just wanted, I needed a day to myself where people would stay away from me, so I was in an antisocial kind of mood, so I put on that clothing, you know, do you believe her? Is she have ne'amanus after she's huchsukah nida b'shchenuseha? So Rav Moshe writes in the context of someone asking whether if it's embarrassing for a couple that she's a nida, can you then pass something directly from husband to wife when she's a nida, because other people will otherwise notice. The phone rings and someone's there, and if the husband doesn't hand the wife the phone, he just puts it down and she picks it up, it's going to be embarrassing. So Rav Moshe thinks that you can't be makel based on the embarrassment issue, because Rav Moshe says that there's nothing to be embarrassed about. You're healthy, a healthy young woman becomes a nida, and there's nothing to be embarrassed about. Should be noted, other poskim disagree. Other poskim say that at least those harchakos that are not mentioned explicitly in Chazal, that are not mentioned in the Gemaras, can be sacrificed if one is going to be embarrassed and there's no other Eitzah. But anyway, that's just on that second issue. And what's the third issue? It's all for this. What's the third issue? Ubu Ushpiza. You're allowed to lie about Ushpiza. What's Ushpiza? Says Rashi. Sha'alu al Ushpiza in Kiblu b'sever panim yafos. They ask you, hey, how is that host? Did he take care of you nicely? So he says, Va'amar, and you tell him, Lav mi detovahi, that's not a good thing. Kadei shlo yikpitzu bo b'nei adam she'enem hu ganem lavo tamid alav yichlas mamono. Very similar, Rashi says. You're going to have people who are going to take unfair advantage. They're always going to try to stay at this guy's house, and they're going to be mechalo all of his mamon. They're going to take away all of his money, and that's not nice. And that's why you shouldn't talk about the Ushpiza. Asks Tosfos in Bav Metzia, he says, first of all, this sounds exactly like the Gemara in Eruchin. He connects it to the Gemara in Eruchin we just said. But he says, but there's another Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos says that Oreach Tova Omer, Kol Masha Tarach Balabayis, Lo Tarach El Bishvili. A good guest is supposed to say that the balabas put in so much work just for me, to make me happy, that apparently you're supposed to go around saying stuff like that. So isn't that against these two Gemaras? So it says, Tosos Yishlomer Dehasa Mari Bein Bnei Adam Huganim V'Hacha Bein Bnei Adam She'enim Huganim. So it says, Tosos, very important. When can't you advertise that somebody is generous? When you're dealing with people who are not good people. When you're dealing with people who are likely going to take unfair advantage. You can advertise that someone is generous when you're dealing with Bnei Adam Huganim. When you're dealing with people who are not going to take unfair advantage, who are reasonable, who are kind, and who are not going to take unfair advantage. So it's a very important chiddush la'alacha. Tosfos' answer is not the only answer to that stira. The Maritz Chais in the back of the Gemara says, no, the difference is between the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Eruchin on the one hand, and the Gemara in Brachos on the other hand, the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Eruchin where it says you're not supposed to advertise how great your host is, and the Gemara in Brachos where it says you are supposed to advertise how great your host is, the Maritz Chais says, no, the difference is that when we say you are supposed to advertise how great your host is, it never says to advertise. It says that you should say, Kol Ma Shetarach Balabayis Bishvili. You should give a lot of compliments when you're a guest at somebody's house. If you're a guest at somebody's house and they make delicious food, you shouldn't say, he's just doing it for himself, I just happen to be here. No, you should say, wow, you did this for me, and you should have that attitude that they did this for you, and they just happen to be also benefiting from it. Right? So very often it's true. right? How often, you know, we know the difference when we're having a lot of company, the amount of food and the amount of, and how nice the silver and the dishes are versus when we're not having company. We do it for the guests. We certainly do it for the guests. And that's the guest's attitude is supposed to reflect that. He should feel like he's being treated special. And all of that is not just so the family could enjoy a good meal. It's so that he as the guest could enjoy the good meal. But it never says the Maariv Chayes, to advertise it. No, not to anybody. Advertising it is a bad thing, because then it's going to cause people to knock down his doors. Rav Moshe doesn't quote that Maariv Chayes. In fact, Rav Moshe quotes very few Maariv Chayes in all of Igros Moshe. He quotes one in Gittin that's a very famous one, but we're not going to get to it. But Rav Moshe takes Tosfos' answer. Tosfos' answer makes the chilek between Bnei Adam Muganim and Bnei Adam Sheinam Muganim, good people and bad people. And Rav Moshe says, and that's how we're going to paskin. If you're dealing with good people, you're allowed to tell them where to collect the tzedakah. Aye, what about Mechalas Mamono? The guy's going to be out of money. Rav Moshe says, look, if he already gave Meiser, he already covered his whole 10%, I could hear it, maybe, that you shouldn't give it. You shouldn't give over the name. Because then you have to worry Mechalas Mamono, maybe. Moshe says, but I'm inclined to say, even if he's already, if you know that he's already given Meiser, you can still send him there until you know that he's already given 20% of his money to tzedakah. Because the Midas Chasidus, even though Moshe says Meiser is a minimum, the maximum is 20%. Hamavazrez al yavazrez yoser michomesh. One is supposed to give, if he can, up until 20% of his money to tzedakah. So Rav Moshe says, if he's not yet at the 20% mark, you can still send people to him. When do Chazal start to worry that a person is going to become poor? Once he's already given 20% of his money, he shouldn't give more, because then we're worried that Shema Ye Ani V'Yitzarech Lebrios, as the Gemara Ksuba says, that he himself is going to become poor, and he's going to need to take money from other people. But before he's gotten to that point, you can send him to that kavir. Not only that, but Moshe doesn't point this out, but other posts can point out that when you have a person who's an Ashir Muflag, who's an incredibly wealthy person, even if he's given more than 20%, he's still allowed to give more. He's allowed to give way more than that in order to avoid, and he doesn't have to worry, Shema Ye Ani, that maybe he's going to get poor, he's going to become poor, and he's going to be Mitzarech Lebrios, because he's an Ashir Muflag, he's very wealthy. Bill Gates can give 50% and still have plenty of money to live. He'll probably still be able to put food on the table if he gives away 50% of his money. So you don't have to worry about the more than 20%. How do we define an Ashir Muflag? So it's a little bit tricky. And Rav Shechter likes to say, I've heard him say once or twice in discussing this halacha, Rav Shechter says, I'm an Asher Muflag, not about me, about himself. He says, I'm an Asher Muflag, I'm extremely wealthy, and I give him way more than 20% of my money to tzedakah. He's an Asher Muflag, he doesn't live in a mansion, he lives in an apartment in Washington Heights. If they own a car, it's one car, right? But he's an Asher Muflag, because he feels like he has enough money to give more than 20%. So how do we define an Asher Muflag is a good question, obviously. But Rav Moshe thinks you could always send to somebody unless you know that they've given 20%. That you can give up the name of the other person. He says you're doing them a favor, because otherwise they'll probably have Yetzer Hara not to give as much. But and he said what's the worst that could happen? The guy's already given his fill of tzedakah. He's already given his meiser. Then he shouldn't be embarrassed. There's another thing. Rav Moshe says you should never be embarrassed to say I can't. To say, look, I just don't have anymore. I gave my maestro, I gave my chomesh, whatever it is, I can't give anymore. Rav Moshe says, I don't see why people would be embarrassed about something like that. Rav Shechter recently gave a talk about tuition assistance, about the tuition crisis. And one of the things he said is that people who can't have to not be embarrassed about it. He said that when he was younger, as a starting Rebbe in yeshiva, he had a very meager salary. He wasn't a big scholar in residence yet, where he was going away every weekend, making money that way. He hadn't written any sfarim yet. I don't know how much money his sfarim making, but whatever it was, he needed a lot of tuition assistance. So I was never embarrassed to ask, and they gave me. And the schools that he sent his kids who gave him tuition assistance, and he said, now that I'm older, I'm paying it back. He said, I didn't keep an exact cheshbon. I don't think he kept an exact cheshbon. But he said, I give a lot of tzedakah to those yeshivas, because that's my hakaras hatov, to those yeshivas. So a person shouldn't be embarrassed. If you can't give, you can't give. So there's nothing to be embarrassed about. But that's not a reason not to try when you think that a person might be able to give. So Moshe is a big fan of sending people to each other. He thinks that's okay. Again, a rabbi has to use a lot of seichel with that, because whatever, that's could be very touchy. Okay, there are a couple of other interesting ones. Minchas Yitzchak has an interesting one. Let's say you know a chas, and this happens all the time also. I'm a high school rebbe, so again, maybe I'm just more sensitive to this because of my profession, but I get a lot of calls about shiduchim from my old talmidim. So sometimes I know a little too much. I know things that the boy did that you know, probably wouldn't please a prospective shidduch. Once I remember with one of my close friends from high school, did something, I wouldn't say, it wasn't a terrible isser, but he did something that was just disgusting. It was just, you know, something that if you would hear it, you would say, in a well-balanced, emotionally balanced person doesn't do that, and it's just disgusting. It wasn't an isser, it didn't hurt anybody, it was just something that was disgusting. And someone called to ask us about a shidduch for that person. Now, if we were to say what he did when he was in the summer after 10th grade, that would be the end of it. So we didn't say. Happens to be she called us back the next day. She said, I heard that he did this. I always tell my family, you never know. This stuff catches up with you. You got to be very careful about what you do. But anyway, I mean, he got married to someone else that we set him up with, another girl that we set him up with, and we didn't tell her. I always wonder if he ever told her, but that's the difference. So the Minchas Yitzchak was asked this Shaila. You know about something that the guy did in the past. So he has a very nuanced approach to it. He says, look, if it was an Avera that he had done, and you know he did tshuva, there's nothing to talk about. You can't go back to tell about Averas that he did after he's done tshuva. He said, if it's a habit type of, meaning he has an interesting raya. The Gemara talks about making a bal tefillah for Yom Narayim. So one of the things about a shliach tzibur that the Gemara talks about are really on Yom Ta'anesim, Gemara in Ta'anes, Daf Tezayin. So amongst the milos of a shliach tzibur, it says that shelo yatza alav shem ra bialduso, that as a child he didn't have a bad reputation. Which makes it sound like even if he did tshuva, you don't want him as your shliach tzibur. But he says that could be a different din. That might be a din in the covet of the tzibur, that people are going to see this guy get up and they're going to say, that guy's the shliach tzibur? It's like fodder for the Lashon Hara at the Shabbos table. That guy's the shliach tzibur? You know what he did when he was... So you don't want, you know, it's just a bizayon for the tzibur, not that there's something inherently wrong with the person. He says if there's a concern that what he had done was not just an avera, but was habit forming, and Rachmana Litzlan, we have people who had drug addictions, alcohol addictions, and something like that, where it's more habit forming, and you have to be, and you're never really totally cured. So it's a much more difficult balance because on the one hand, you don't want to shut them off for life. You don't want to say that this person is never going to be able to get a shidduch, never going to be able to do anything, because everyone's immediately going to shut them off. But on the other hand, it's something that a prospective chasen or kala deserves to know. So he's much, when it's more habit-forming, he thinks that it's much more that it's much more important to share the information rather than when it just happens to be an isser. One last ta'ara, I know it's late already. One last ta'ara, who it was, the Mishnah Alachos, I guess Rabbi Menashe Klein over here, or one of these tshuvas, I forgot which one, says that, or Shurmuk says, that if you have a question to ask about a shidduch, right, and you're going to basically ask the person to tell you Lashon Hara, but it's going to be mutter because it's for a toeles. So there are two ways you could start the conversation. You could just say, look, I need to know this and this about this person. And they'll tell you, because no one has a problem speaking Lashon Hara, they'll be happy to speak Lashon Hara to you. Or you could say, look, it's about a shidduch. I need to know this and this information. Then you're informing them what you're about to say is not Lashon Hara. So he suggests the possibility that maybe you have to tell them it's about a shidduch. Because if, even though either way they're allowed to say it in the end, but if they don't think they're allowed to say it and they say it anyway, then they're being mechavin for an avera. So it's lifnei iver to ask them when they think they're doing an avera. But if you're going to ask them and they don't think they're doing an avera because you tell them in advance, no, it's about a shidduch, then it's okay. And he says, Mashal ma'adam v'domer, Shomel Zaman Orbach has a psak, that if you have an option, you have a cholish yishpah sakon on Shabbos, you need to call a doctor to be mechal Shabbos for you. And you have an option of a Shomer Shabbos doctor or a non-Shomer Shabbos doctor. Shlomo Zalman says, call the Shomer Shabbos doctor. Why? Because non-Shomer Shabbos doctor, why is he being mechal Shabbos? Because he doesn't care about Shabbos. Shomer Shabbos doctor, why is he being mechal Shabbos? Because Tzatzalos Nefesh is doing a mitzvah. He says, that will make the difference. The Shomer Shabbos doctor you call, he's doing a mitzvah. the non-Shomer Shabbos doctor you're calling is doing an Avera, because he's just not Makshav Chilul Shabbos. So he says a very similar thing with the Lashon Hara. Okay, you can look through the Tshuvas, other fascinating Tshuvas on contemporary topics of Lashon Hara.